Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, October 29, 2020. Two soldiers from South Sudan were killed during a border dispute with Uganda.
The units that made that incursion were armed with anti-civilian pieces and they were supported by light military trucks that were mounted with 12.7 machine guns. That unit launched a surprise attack on our defensive border outpost at Ogea in Mabui County in eastern Equatorial.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's military spokesman says four soldiers were killed, two from South Sudan and two from Uganda, during a border dispute. Major General Lul Roy Kwong says the incident occurred when Ugandan soldiers crossed into Pogi border post in Magui County, 2 kilometers from the Uganda's Ngomoromo border crossing point. Uganda's deputy spokesperson in the Ministry of Defense, Lieutenant Colonel Dio Akiki, confirms the incident, but says Ugandan soldiers killed unknown gunmen in South Sudanese military uniform who had erected illegal roadblocks 2 kilometers inside Uganda. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
Major General Kong tells South Sudan in Focus that the incident happened when a mechanized unit of Uganda People's Defense Forces crossed Ogei border post inside Magui County of South Sudan's eastern Equatorial state. A Ugandan military spokesperson confirms the incident, but says Ugandan soldiers killed unknown gunmen wearing South Sudanese army uniforms who set up a roadblock 2 kilometers inside Ugandan territory. Kong strongly disputes that statement, saying the Ugandan forces were 2 kilometers inside South Sudan.
The units that made that incursion were armed with anti-civilian pieces and they were supported by light military trucks that were mounted with 12.7 machine guns. That unit launched a surprise attack on our defensive border outpost at Ogea in Magui County in eastern Equatorial State. Our forces were engaged in gun battles that resulted in four getting killed, two from our side and two from the side of UPDF. We also heard one serviceman that was captured by the UPDF forces.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via telephone from Luengo District on Wednesday, Uganda's deputy defense spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Deo Akiki, admitted UPDF soldiers killed what he called two unknown armed people.
There are some unknown armed people who erected a roadblock inside Uganda on our border with South Sudan. And we sent there our patrol to cross-check who these people could be, only to be returned with fire. So a smaller force was, when it arrived to that place, it was repulsed with fire by those who were making a roadblock. The small force was reinforced, and these people who had directed the roadblock were outnumbered and were subdued.
Lieutenant Colonel Akiki denies Ugandan soldiers were killed in the clashes. He confirmed Ugandan soldiers captured one person and recovered two machine guns. Kong says after the brief incursion, the UPDF withdrew and returned to Ugandan territory, and the SSPDF took full control of Pogi.
The top leadership of SSPDF headquarters established contacts with UPDF and promised to hand over the remains of our fallen servicemen. You know, when they briefly overran Pogeo, they collected the remains of the fallen comrades as well as their rifles, and they took them across the border. After we had established contacts with them, they promised that the remains would be handed over to us on the 29th of October so that they are given a decent burial back home here.
In a WhatsApp message to South Sudan in Focus following his interview, Akiki said the UPDF had evacuated both bodies and a captured armed person was taken to Uganda's 4th Division Army Barracks in Gulu. Akiki says the two sides will investigate the incident with a view towards preventing similar confrontations in future. In June this year, similar clashes occurred between the two sides in a disputed border area inside South Sudan's Kajukaji County of Central Equatorial State, which left four SSPDF soldiers dead. Kong blames the incursions by Ugandan soldiers into South Sudanese territory for the repeated clashes, but Akiki has a different opinion.
We suspect they are still some armed groups within these areas of South Sudan, and I think why they do this is for survival purposes. So they have not seemed to have given up their arms, and they make these roadblocks to waylay either trucks that are taking things to capture what they can use or rob people.
In the past, Akiki says Ugandan and South Sudanese military leaders together skewed the South Sudan-Uganda border. Akiki says the two countries need to work together again, sharing intelligence information and conducting joint patrols to skew their common border. Kong says to prevent similar crises in the future, the two countries should demarcate the border using the available colonial maps so it is clear where each country's territory ends. Similar crises were reported in 2009 between the SSPDF and the Kenyan Army in Kapweta in eastern Equatorial State. In 2016, other crises between the SSPDF and the Ugandan Army occurred in Magui County. In a press release issued today, Wotshan Sevier Lazarus, executive director for the South Sudan NGO Support Peace Initiative Development Organization, urged the Technical Committee on the Borders of both countries to recommit to resolving border disputes. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Sudanese and South Sudanese security and defense officials have signed a memorandum of understanding to strengthen security cooperation between the two countries. The cooperation agreement calls for securing border between the two countries to ease the movement of goods and people. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudan Defense Minister Yasin Ibrahim signed the MOU on behalf of Khartoum, while South Sudan Defense Minister Angelina Teng signed on behalf of Juba. Speaking shortly after the signing ceremony in Khartoum this afternoon, Minister Teng said the agreement is aimed at strengthening security and defense cooperation between the two countries. She says the two sides also agreed to build the capacity of both countries' security forces.
It's a good beginning. It's an opportunity to harness the relationship, especially after, you know, the signing of the agreement, the Sudan agreement that was signed in Juba. And as you're aware, we are also implementing an agreement of which Sudan is also a guarantor. So it's basically putting onto an structural form the kinds of relationship that are already there.
Teng says the MOU also tackles other issues, including improving safe border crossings so that South Sudanese and Sudanese can cross into each other's countries without encountering any danger. She says the border crossing points agreed to earlier will be operational within the next 21 days.
A committee will be established, and within the next 3 weeks, we will see their program on the operationalization of this crossing.
The two countries also inaugurated a river port in Kosti town in Sudan's White Nile state and a free market zone at Jebelin, south of Kosti. South Sudan Foreign Affairs Minister Beatrice Kamiswani calls the MOU a good step towards achieving improved cooperation between the two countries. Wani says if the agreement is fully implemented, citizens of both countries will reap the benefits.
This also allows our citizens to visit, to travel freely, to carry out businesses, to also to work if you want to work in either country, and so on and so forth. We also have other issues within the cooperation agreement of the two countries, issues to do with our citizens, their pension rights, and so many other things.
Wani says the Foreign Affairs Ministry will follow up on the deal and ensure that other technical teams carry out their mandate.
The relationship, I think, will entail a lot of progress and prosperity for the two countries, because as we always say, whatever happens in Sudan affects South Sudan and vice versa. I think this is the highest that we have come, and we want to keep up the momentum.
Sudan and South Sudan signed a cooperation agreement in September 2012, which allows Sudanese and South Sudanese citizens to freely move, trade, and own property across the two countries' shared border. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
A conflict-based analyst says the government of South Sudan should set up a neutral court to handle conflict between farmers and cattle keepers in eastern Equatorial State. Early this week, lawmakers from Magui County in South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly said conflict was looming in the Magui area following the influx of cattle from Jonglei State. Analysts with the Institute of Social Policy and Research says farmers and cattle keepers should continue to dialogue to find ways to coexist. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Earlier this week, MPs representing Magui County of Eastern Equatorial State in the National Legislative Assembly said a conflict was looming in the area following a large influx of cattle from Jonglei State. The lawmakers say the situation is affecting the livelihood of the local community. Otim David Okot, Agoro community leader in the National Legislative Assembly, says the cattle, which number into the thousands, are destroying farms in Magui County. He says the cattle belong to powerful military leaders and senior administration officials. Okot says pastoralists are transporting cattle from Bor using motorboats and long trucks, then offload the animals in Magui with impunity.
It means these are not normal cattle herders. These are sophisticated people with the financial muscle and very powerful. The owners, and we have been already notified over or about 50 or so cattle camps that in Agoro Boma of Magui County, even over in muddy areas of Greater Pagari, some of these cattle camps belong to senior political and military officials in this government. That's why we are bringing this attention to His Excellency the President to investigate this.
Asked to comment on the matter, South Sudan People's Defense Force spokesman Major General Lul Rai Kwong had this to say.
I cannot even comment on individual issues. Those are whether there are powerful generals or powerful politicians. They are owning cows as individuals. They are not keeping those cows as a property of the military. And therefore, I'm not in a position to comment.
Okot did not name the politicians or military leaders he accused of grazing their cattle in Magui County, but says they have found a safe haven under President Salva Kiir's government. He says the Acholi community is angry and warns if the matter is not addressed quickly, it could lead to conflict. MP Beatrice Abe, who also represents Magui County in the National Parliament, says the cattle must go.
The intention is not to respect any order. The intention is not to respect anybody's right. The intention is just to dominate and settle. So the way now they are coming even with families, even with what they are coming to displace our people. Not only displaced people, even denying them livelihood, their farming activities. So that is very clear. For us, we want the cows to leave our land. We want the cows to go.
Okot says he understands there is a crisis in Bor due to widespread flooding. He says the pastoralists can stay in Magui until December on the condition that they desist from harassing residents and destroying farms of the host community. Boboya James of the Institute for Social Policy and Research in Juba says to prevent conflict in Magui County, farmers and pastoralists should talk face to face.
It's important for a high-level dialogue to be organized so that the Madis and the Cholis are able to sort of bring their voices, including what they think needs to be done in order for coexistence to be created between those communities, because some of the cattle keepers there might stay there for a while before going back to the area. Some of the cattle keepers are not even willing to be thinking about going away.
Jimmy says several rounds of discussions in the past resulted in a number of resolutions aimed at enhancing peaceful coexistence between the different communities of Madi, Acholi and the Dinka pastoralists, but none of them have worked.
The reason why this problem is so escalating significantly is because they have been instigated and influenced by politicians and military generals in Juba to continue doing whatever they are doing. So they have a backup in the central government in Juba. And the problem is, because they have a backup, the local government, the absence of local governments on the ground, the absence of the state government in terms of positive responding to addressing the problem, has actually increased anxiety and increased fear and also increased the tension in the two communities.
Jamie suggests the two communities work with the government to set up a neutral court to resolve dispute between the farmers and pastoralists before they turn violent. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, opposition groups accuse Tanzanian government of election fraud. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you offer advice to your siblings? If so, what kind of advice?
Yes, I advise my siblings. I tell them to be respectful to everybody, old and young alike.
Yes, I advise my siblings. I tell them not to waste money, but to be careful in the way they handle money. I also tell them to give to people who are in need.
Hard work always pays, and if you work hard, at the end you realize something that you didn't expect. So that's the single piece of advice that I offer to my siblings.
I always tell them to they work hard in school. Then, of course, they should be open in case they want anything or lack anything.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. As the presidential campaign in U.S. enters its final stretch, President Donald Trump and his Democratic opponent Joe Biden spent the day on Wednesday continuing to make the case why each was the right person to lead the nation for the next 4 years. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Harmon joins International Edition's Lori Lodin for more on where the candidates and their closing arguments amid a health crisis not seen in 100 years.
These were both in the state of Arizona, and he did pretty much his stump speech, but he did talk a little bit about the polls, something he had also mentioned to reporters earlier in the day in Las Vegas. The president claiming that his poll numbers are very good, telling the reporters that you don't see the real poll numbers, claiming that the numbers coming out are what he calls suppression polls. The national polls are typically showing former Vice President Joe Biden with about a 7 or 8 percentage point lead over Donald Trump, but about half that margin in key battleground states. And in some of those, it is within the margin of error. So it is pretty close in the key states. But the president is really spinning some of these numbers, claiming that he's leading in Wisconsin, although there was a poll out, the ABC News Washington Post poll, that had Joe Biden up 17% or something like that. So whether this turns out to be a suspension of reality or we see a repeat of 2016, where Hillary Clinton was also up about a week before Election Day, the difference, according to the pollsters, they're saying that Joe Biden's lead is much more solid than Hillary Clinton's lead was at this point 4 years ago.
And he really wants to move past the pandemic. But of course, we know the pandemic isn't moving on despite those wishes. Were the crowds just as big and were people wearing masks?
The crowds were big. They were tightly packed together. Many people were not wearing masks. So very much a typical crowd. Joe Biden, however, is again commenting about these sort of rallies, because the Democratic Party nominee, of course, is doing socially distance events, small crowds where everyone is required to wear a mask. And Biden, after he received a public health briefing in Wilmington, Delaware, criticized the president specifically for a rally on Tuesday night in Omaha, Nebraska, that he said after the president had departed, hundreds of people, including older Americans and children, were out in sub-freezing temperatures for hours, and several people ended up having to go to the hospital, apparently for hypothermia. According to the former vice president, this is showing that, you know, Donald Trump gets his photo opportunity, then he gets out and he leaves everyone else to suffer the consequences of his failure to make a responsible plan. And according to Biden, he just doesn't care.
And what else was the former vice president up to on the campaign trail Wednesday?
Joe Biden on Wednesday went to a public building in Wilmington, Delaware, his hometown, to vote. Donald Trump had cast his ballot this past Saturday at a library in West Palm Beach, Florida, near his Mar-a-Lago resort. So both the president and his challenger are among the 75 million Americans who have now voted ahead of the official election day. And that remarkably totals more than half of the overall 2016 vote count, which was a total of just under 139 million people.
It really does seem like a trend across the country, the number of people who actually have already even voted before Election Day. How unprecedented is this?
This is really remarkable. It is, of course, a product in great part of the coronavirus pandemic, where people are nervous about being lined up on Election Day. And a lot of states have made it easy to go out and vote early in person. And then, of course, there is the mail-in balloting, which the president has taken issue with, especially those states that have mailed out ballots to all eligible voters. The president has repeatedly said that the only people that should be getting the mailed ballots are those that request them. And he again is alleging that there's going to be funny business with some of these ballots being mailed back, especially in states such as Nevada.
That's White House Bureau Chief Steve Hammond speaking to International Edition's Lori Loden. Europe is again emerging as a hotspot for the corona pandemic, with surging infection rates and hospitalization. Several countries are taking aggressive actions as a second wave of the infections threatens to overwhelm health systems. International Edition's Lori Loden speaks to Paris-based reporter Catherine Field as France becomes the hotspot in the continent.
From Friday, people will have to stay home. They will need to work from home where possible and will only be allowed to leave their home for shopping and exercise once a day or for medical appointments. There will be a ban on public and private gatherings. Across the country, non-essential businesses will remain closed, including restaurants and cafes. However, schools will stay open and people will be able to escort their children to school. That will make it easier for people to work. Also, factories and government offices will stay open and will be operating throughout the lockdown. Universities, however, will be closed and their courses will have to go online. These measures will remain in force until at least December 1st, by which time the government hopes the number of new COVID cases will have gone down to around 5,000 a day.
And we're hearing that doctors had been urging him to do this as the nation's intensive care units have been filling up with COVID-19 cases. What is the situation there with regard to new cases and hospitalizations? And is there any indication as to why France in particular has become the European hotspot?
Indeed, around 60% of intensive care beds are now occupied by COVID patients. The president said doctors had predicted that by mid-November, all intensive care beds could be filled with COVID patients. And that was one of the reasons he opted for this sudden, brutal break approach to halting the virus transmission. We've already had the first transfer of patients on Wednesday. The French Air Force transported four intensive care patients from Avignon in the south of France to Brest in the extreme northwest, where where there is less pressure on hospital facilities. President Macron said that everyone in Europe has been surprised by the spread of the virus. He said even the most pessimistic didn't predict that France, along with neighboring countries, would be submerged by the speed of the spread.
And among the many other European countries now seeing surges, Germany also taking some pretty aggressive steps to combat this.
The German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced a similar nationwide lockdown. It will come into effect on Monday. Bars, restaurants, they'll be closed. Private gatherings will be restricted. However, schools and kindergartens will remain open. She said the track and trace method of breaking the chain of transmission just wasn't working anymore, and the virus is spreading. So despite having been somewhat successful at avoiding a first wave, this second wave threatens to overwhelm the health service in Germany. And the Chancellor said she had no other options, although she did say these restrictions will be reviewed on the 11th of November.
And Catherine, overall, does it appear that more EU countries than not are seeing surges? And how will this impact EU economic plans that had been negotiated for recovery from the first wave?
Yes, few European nations have been spared this second wave, which medical experts had feared would be harder and more deadly than the first, as it's also coming during the winter period. All of the countries are really scrambling to contain the spread. The external borders of the 27 member European Union are closed. However, nationals can return home if they can get a flight and if they can provide proof of being COVID-free. For the road ahead, the 27 EU leaders will be holding a virtual summit on Thursday evening. They'll be reviewing issues such as economic assistance and as well looking at how the EU can be the central point to providing medical supplies to member nations.
That's Paris-based reporter Catherine Field speaking to International Edition's Laurie Lodin.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Before we end the show, I have a special announcement for you. This program can now be heard in South Sudan at 7:30 p.m. local time on VOA affiliate stations. Please inform your friends and relatives. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with Colonel Mido with the song Nani Ongere.
Monyo mijinga yara egonanie Monyo mijinga yara egonanie Anevuni aurwe Anevuni aurwe Anevune aurwe Anevune aurwe Nani olotir nani olongere mama Nani olotir nani olongere mama nani olongere Nani olotir nani olongere Nani olotir
ayamani balu tauru ena isu
Nani olongere
ayamani balu tauru ena isu
Nani onyo horibon
ayamani balu tauru ena isu
We've been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Nani Ongere, and to our listeners in Torit, I will add VOA Ongere. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.